I want to get on to our next guest, which is his name is Shane Hashy, and he is a member of a band in New Orleans, of all places. I lived there, so I got to know him there, and it's Remedy Crew Band. But I'm having him on because he has experience with the elite colleges. He did his undergraduate at Columbia University in New York, and he graduated from Harvard Law School. But he has plenty to say about it. So, Shane, thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, how you doing, Fergus?
Doing great. Now, so looking back, you know, you have graduated from these well-known colleges. Should others seek to emulate you? You know, what wisdom do you give on those considering that option?
I think they should emulate me if they have parents who can afford to pay for most of it, or if they can get a free or mostly free ride. And if not, I think they'd be better off finding a trade and learning a job skill. So I think in the cost-benefit analysis, unless you're an engineer or a doctor, or you're really intent on being a lawyer, which I wasn't. I only did because I had so much debt from undergrad. I had $100,000 plus just from my undergraduate degree. So I had to do something else to try to just pay that back, right? But as far as studying liberal arts, I have to say, socially, we should view it as a luxury rather than a right. I think we should view it as something that is, maybe it is, like, personally beneficial, but there's a cost-benefit analysis there, and if you can't get out of it without too much debt, it's probably not worth your time,
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's part of the problem, that the cost is just so immense in many instances. But so I went to a university which is one of the, if not the most expensive in the country, but of course I had a full athletic scholarship, so it didn't hurt me one bit. So
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, and in fact, so all those other people who were paying for were basically subsidizing me, I guess. Right. But
I think it's a great thing. I want to say I think it's a great thing if you can afford it. Just like having a Ferrari is a great car to drive if you can afford it.
One bit that made it more interesting to me too, and I guess you moved to go to New York as well, is that I was in a new place. I'd come, from New Zealand, so it was a different experience. But it depends. Like, so there's much more going on than just the actual college courses, which didn't necessarily teach me most of what I learned during those 4 years.
Right.
And yeah, so what? Yeah, would you? But so you have a particular experience in that you are. I mean, you went to the prestigious ones. But you often will doubt, how much value or how much difference that made. Do you want to clarify what your perspective is on how much added value came from the prestige that came with that college?
There's a couple aspects. I think the things that people would most ask about, how was it? Did you get a great education? And I did. I love my time at Columbia, not so much in law school, but not because it was Harvard, and because I don't like law school. The education is great. So, again, it's all about cost-benefit analysis. If my parents were surgeons and it didn't cost me anything coming out of it, it would have been great. And it was a great experience, just going to Columbia. I mean, that made me a man intellectually. I feel like I really learned to understand the world deeply because I went to Columbia. It was a great education.
I'll say one thing about you, Shane. This is, you're one of the most sort of critical, sort of aggressive thinkers I know. And during Columbia, you didn't necessarily agree with what was going on there, but you sort of pointed out problems, which it was almost good that you were sort of thrown in the heart of the beast of people who you thought had sloppy ideas or were confrontational in a loose way. So you were there to confront them. You face people who are intellectual but not necessarily rigorous in their thinking. I'm not sure whether that's a good description, but do you want to speak to what you did face when you went there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't get too much into it because it's not the topic. But yeah, I mean, I went in. I was pretty liberal, pretty state oriented. Pretty much believed all of that sort of stuff. Through my education. And I mean, it was kind of both. It was both through what I learned in class and through what happened to me outside of class that I sort of changed my perspective to a more libertarian one. And there was a lot of hostility there towards, not fitting in with this kind of left leaning academic point of view. And there was a there was a big, it was post September 11th. I was there at Columbia when September 11th happened. The aftermath of that, the Iraq War had kicked off recently thereafter. So there was a lot of discussion about the military in general and America's role and Columbia students, because that's the age group of people who are who would be going to fight a just or an unjust war, right? So I had some friends who really got the ball rolling on a ROTC movement to bring that back to Columbia at the same time. Kind of they just kind of happened to be there thinking about it, capitalized on that moment very, very well. And through my involvement with that, I encountered a lot of very hostile, left-leaning, but, you know, quote, high-level intellectual academic discourse that I thought was very, very wrong and very hostile to other ideas. So that really changed my political worldview. And in addition to what I learned in class, made me truly enlightened me because I had great teachers, and I really do love Columbia. So
Interesting. And I know because you even said, you've said to me that you'd be interested in becoming a professor or a teacher of some sort. If you could make it work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing I want to say too, is the other thing is people are going to ask, like, what did you get out of it? You know, and it was personally extremely fulfilling, minus consideration of the cost. But the other thing is that I know the next thing that anyone was going to ask you or anyone else would ask, what is the monetary value that you get out of that when you get out of it? And so there's a very clear distinction here. Coming from Harvard Law School, there's a great monetary value to be had. If you came out of Columbia Law School, there's a great monetary value to be had. But as an undergrad, there really is no, there's really not much value to it, except for the fact that it will get you noticed. So I was talking to some friends about this earlier today, one who went to Harvard undergrad, and he kind of went back and we went back and forth about it, and he said, well, you know, it does get you a job. I said, yeah, but the problem is, it gets you the same $30,000 job that everyone else is fighting for with an undergraduate degree.
Right.
Particularly a non-science undergraduate degree. I don't know what engineers and physicists do when they come out of Harvard, but most people that come out of a place like Columbia or Harvard, if you've got your run-of-the-mill liberal arts degree, all you're doing is competing for everyone else in New York City or Boston for an entry-level $25,000 to $35,000 an hour year job. And you get the interview, or your resume goes to the top, and you know, have to personally pass the rest of the interview process. It will help you a lot that way to get a $30,000 job in New York City, which is another reason that if your parents aren't paying for Columbia, it might not necessarily be worth it to you. You might be better off just going to SUNY, you know, and not having much debt, and then coming to New York and finding your own way and, you know, achieving on your own merit.
Networking or something like that. Yeah. Well, that's I want to back that up too. Because I've looked at the jobs that are on offer at sort of, you could say, prestigious think tanks or organizations, and right in New York City, and yeah, like you said, it'll be $30,000 or $35,000, and I just think, how on earth do you live in New York City on $35,000? You know, the actual wage difference does not seem to be clear, but in terms of signaling difference, there may be something going on. But we're coming up on another break, so if you want to ask Shane a question, it's 1-855-655-2121. Stay with us, folks. This is The Stateless Man on the Overseas Radio Network.
Live call-in shows and hosts from your favorite countries. This is the Overseas Radio Network.
This is The Stateless Man, and we're speaking with Shane Hashi, a musician in New Orleans and a graduate of both Columbia and Harvard, Harvard Law School. And he's giving his perspective on the state of, well, the prudence of higher education. His main theme was concern was that it's just too costly. He actually enjoyed his time, particularly at Columbia, but he just thought the debt that came with it was not really hard to justify. Okay. Did you have a question there?
Yeah, for me, one thing that you touched on there, Shane, is you talked about education here is a luxury, not a right. And
yes, definitely, yes.
Yeah, and a lot of European countries, and, you know, I studied in Austria for a little while, I've studied in Canada, and a lot of these places people assume that the state takes a, you know, front seat role in education. They want it either subsidized all the way or the lowest possible. They're actually demonstrating right now in Montreal. It's probably one of the biggest student demonstrations we've had in the world. And it, when you're talking about Columbia and Harvard, I mean, these are extremely competitive schools. There are so many people from across the country, and not to mention across the world, who are applying to these. And it's very true that it is a luxury to go to these schools and not a right at all. And it's something that for the people who, you know, just you have to imagine someone who does not have all those options. You know, what is someone to do who perhaps they, of course, can't go to college and it probably wouldn't be a good idea for them. But also the system is biased. If they want to do any sort of job training, you know, they always need a certain type of degree or a certain type of certification from the state. So, you know, what can someone do in that situation?
Yeah, I've thought a lot about this, and although I haven't researched it academically, you know, there's more I could learn. Depends on what you want to do, but I think there are a lot of things that you could do that don't require, you know, necessarily all these certifications. I was just talking to my girlfriend, actually, who never went to college, and
right.
She makes a good 50-plus thousand a year income as a paralegal. She was a waitress for a few years. A friend got her a paralegal job. She's been doing it for 15 years. And she's worked her way up and gotten good at it and gotten good jobs. Yeah, now, you know, I think people need to think about whether you have something you love and you want to do, like I do, like music. I kind of threw it all away to start over and take a big gamble, right?
Sure.
Or whether you want to make a living, right? And if you just want to make a living, and I'm doing this when I'm not making a living with music, you know, I'm throwing boxes at UPS, I'm working in a print shop. So there's a lot of things you can do if you're just thinking it, I want to make a living and enjoy my life and then get off work and have my life. You could be a, you know, truck. There's shortages I hear all the time. There's stories on NPR. They need truck drivers. Okay, you've got to get some small bit of certification, but they pay you pretty well if you're willing to drive a big truck.
Right.
You know, there's an article in the Wall Street Journal a few months ago about $200,000 a year minors, if you can look that up. People have to be willing to work jobs that don't have, you know, there's a snobbery that people seem to have, especially smart people, which I was guilty of when I was younger, that
sure.
if you have a dirty hands type job, you know, it's beneath you somehow. You want to be studying Plato, but you can study Plato in your spare time. And honestly, if you're willing to get your hands dirty, the way things are right now, I think there might be a huge opportunity for people who are willing to get their hands dirty and be mechanics and do the dirty work. Because everyone's so averse to it as a society, we're so luxurious.
Does
that make sense?
No, it totally makes sense to me because I worked for a moving company during my college years, right? I didn't get any internships. I just went and like chucked boxes around, and people there were making, you know, good salaries. You know, basically all you had to do was show a little bit of a loyalty. You know, just within 6 months you'd be having you'd be driving and leading crews. It was just like, and they actually did like people to have degrees, but it wasn't about the degree. It was just they thought that they didn't want people who were young and didn't know what they were doing. They wanted people who were more kind of stable.
Competent.
Right, yeah. So, no, I agree totally with that. I mean, but I want to put back, I mean, we got I got an email here from someone saying that, you know, there are plenty of professions that do require training. I guess it really depends what your emphasis is. And obviously, there are some, and particularly government roles, which is, you know, kind of irritating that they are sort of bureaucratic like that. And they just want to see degrees. But I think that the key point here is that the universal right or entitlement, or even just that it's a good idea for everybody to do, I think that is the problem. You've got to be pragmatic about this and not just think it's just like something you just are compelled to do. The other question that I received was about whether you might want to comment on this, Shane. Do you blame the teachers and secondary education system for emphasizing college so much? I mean, was that what influenced you? And would you have felt like a failure if you had taken a job rather than gone to college?
That's a good. I mean, you know, people should have a little bit more background here. I was in the joined the Army right after high school.
Sure.
I was in the Army for 5 years before I went to college, which greatly enhanced my college experience. And I would suggest, you know, working before you go to college to anybody. For me, I think because I was always a smart kid and I was always intellectual and talking to adults about intellectual things and politics, I wouldn't say it was my teachers, I wouldn't say it was my parents, I wouldn't say it was any particular agents. I would say it's just the overall social meme and the overall theme that if you have a brain, you have to go to college. And if you don't, I mean, like, I have my family, my stepdad's a contractor, my stepbrother's a landscaper. If I had said, you know what, I'm going to do those jobs and play guitar on the side, people would think I'm dumber than I am because, I'd be the same person, but people would look down on me for not having gone to college, especially, I could say I'm intelligent all day, I could argue about Ron Paul and politics, but someone would say, yeah, right, we didn't even go to college, what do you know? So I think that's kind of the way society sees it. You know, if you've got a brain, you go to college. If you work with your hands and you don't have a brain, there's a lot of that in society. But I wouldn't blame any agent in my life. I think it's just I absorbed and believed that idea from society when I was younger.
No, I believe it too. And it's just unfortunate that many of the teachers that I had growing up, you know, we could talk about they were feminists too, but that's another issue for another day. But
yeah, right.
They would look down upon the work that, say, my father did on the farm. And I just think that's just a terrible misperception. I think the exact opposite now, that the guy out there, you know, actually producing something, and rather than living off a government salary, he's the one who really is involved in the noble act. And when we were working for the moving company, many people would look down upon us as though we were inferior. And it was ironic, too, because actually we had lots of guys working there who were from Harvard, you know, Harvard University, Boston University, who hadn't been able to find jobs, and so they were working for the moving company, and they'd say, you know, why don't you go to university so you can get a better job? We'd say, well, actually, we have been to university.
Well educated.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I've got an anecdote if you've got another.
Sure. Yep.
I mean, when I got out of the Army, I was at a party that somebody had thrown, my stepsister, and I met a guy who was in his 40s, and we talked about, you know, serious things for a while. I said, you're a smart kid. Why don't you come work for me for a while? I'll get you Microsoft certified in 6 months. You'll be making $60,000 a year, blah, blah, blah. You'll move out from here. And I humored him, but I was like, you know, I just got out of the Army. I was working really hard. You know, I mean, it's great, but I want to go to college and study philosophy. You know, I want to get a real education here. I was kind of a joke. I didn't take it that seriously. I thought, yeah. And, you know, if I had email now, I would write him back in a heartbeat, say, remember me? But I actually made a choice like that. You know, I made a choice not to follow that up and not to follow this kind of more, you know, serious, real career because I had these lofty ideas about college. And I think that's where, you know, the vast majority of people end up who go to college and, you know, particularly liberal arts people. You know, if you want to be a chemist or a theoretical physicist, you've got to go to college. There's no doubt about that. But if you're going to college to read Shakespeare and learn history, if you can't afford it, then you probably, and you're still going anyways, you probably just kind of bought into this social meme that we have, and you aren't really thinking about it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, when I was at Boston, I actually had the university president mentor me, because at that time I wanted to be involved in politics, and I thought that he would give me wisdom. He did, actually. And it showed me how bitter he had become. But anyway, that's another story. But one thing he said to me about my studies, he said, look, if you can just read a book about it, don't be studying at university. Take some physics or economics or something that actually has some intellectual rigor that you need someone to help you help with explaining it. Otherwise, you're wasting your time. And he said he didn't understand why people took history courses because you could just get out a book and read it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you could get something out of a history class if you've got a good teacher that goes. I've gotten a lot out of history classes, but I didn't need them. You know,
they were helpful. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, exactly. They could be interesting or helpful, and to discuss would be great. But these days, there are so many alternatives. I mean, there are meetup groups. You know, there are places like Mises Academy. You know, there are so many online learning forums that are free. Places like, you know, I work for the John Locke Foundation. We have weekly lectures, and many of them are on history. You can just come along and get a free lecture. So again, the cost is just the problem there. I mean,
I have to come in one thing that I've sort of been able to learn from, especially in the last few years, has just been YouTube. Just going on the internet, watching documentaries, learning. I learned everything about European politics, European integration, all from YouTube. Looking at the European Parliament, people arguing what the debates were. I walked into an Austrian university and knew more than Europeans who had been there their entire lives.
That's interesting, too, because you know, I only came to the U.S. as an adult, and now I write about U.S. politics. I didn't have any of the sort of like American history
study.
You
learned it pretty well, I would say that.
Thanks. What were you going to comment there, Shane?
Well, yeah, I mean, I know we only have so much time, and I wanted to address the point of this bureaucracy that we've created.
Sure.
I think another reason people go to college. There's the people who fancy themselves philosophers, like I did and still do. But sure. You know, most people think maybe they get their jobs. They want to come home and watch Family Guy. Some guys work with their hands. A lot of people don't. But the problem is we've created this culture, and it's beyond education. It's one of my friends calls it this Soviet bureaucracy we've created in America, where you've got the HR robots that you've got to get through to get a job, and you've got the layers and layers, and the bigger the company, right, the more inefficient, the more layers you have, and it's government regulations piled on top of it. We've got a bureaucratic culture that you have to jump through this hurdle. So you can take me, who I think I'm a philosopher, but you take your average college student, they're going to 4 years of drinking school just to check off the box so they can, check off the next box of getting the internship to check off the next box until they get their lawnmower, and their yard. So, I mean, we make college a requirement to get jobs that don't need college. Right. My girlfriend's a paralegal, and she doesn't have a college degree, but if she was in New York, the paralegals went to Harvard.
Right, Shane, we're coming right up to the end. Shane, it's been really a pleasure to speak with you. I miss those days in New Orleans, mate. So, yeah, I hope to speak with you again soon. And thanks so much for coming on the show. With us is the Stateless Man on the Overseas Radio Network.
You're tuned in to OverseasRadio.com, the station to help you reach your dream destination.